WTF1 presents Hot Takes Wednesday. Hello and welcome back to Hot Takes Wednesday. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you can join us for another edition of HTW, the show with your hot takes and our even hotter opinions. Thank you very much for listening as ever. And this is the first on Hot Takes Wednesday in this era of the show, or at least certainly since I've been host anyway. We have not one, but two guests on this week's edition of the show. And you've probably seen them on Instagram, maybe on TikTok as well. They were, the fun fact, they were the first pair we ever signed as a part of WTF1 talent. A little bit of history for the expansion of us. Very, very glad to say hi to Desiree and Virginia. You probably know them a little bit better as the Pit Lane Twins. Hello, ladies. How's it going?
Hello, hello.
Hello.
Like, yeah, so we are still a bit nervous.
I don't blame you. It's like, I know being on this show is a massive honor. I'm joking, but of course. Also, good luck to the listeners at home being able to pick Desiree and Virginia's voices apart on this one, because that's going to be very difficult. I know it's hard enough trying to pick them apart visually, but audio-wise, we might be in some trouble. I will try to be a little bit dictatory as to who's speaking when, but yeah, pleasure to have the Pit Lane Twins of us on this edition of the show. So for those who are new, as I always say, every podcast is someone's first. Welcome to HTW. On this show, you, the fine WTF1 audience, send in your hot takes. You can do so on Twitter, or X, depending on which you want to call it these days, depending on what brand name Elon's got for it this week. You can send them in on Monday morning whenever they put the picture up. We'll look out for the hot sauce bottle on that one. You can send them to me on Instagram as well. It's instagram.com/DreWTF1 on there, or DrewF1, depending on how you read it. Again, I've had that plenty of times as well. And of course, you can email the show as well. contact@WTF1.com. All the hot takes get forwarded to me and I go through them with a comb and then pick out the best ones for the show as ever. So once you guys send in your takes, me and our lovely guests, the Pit Lane Twins on this occasion, will be having a little bit of back and forth discussion about them, and then eventually we will score them on a scale of 1 to 5. 1 being that we strongly disagree with them, 5 being that we strongly agree. I would have normally had 6 takes on this episode, but we're only going to have 5 because there's 3 of us. There'll be a bit more dialogue and a bit more discussion. And ladies, if you want to play on hard difficulty, feel free. And if you don't know what that means, it means you're only allowed to use 3 once over the course of the show. We don't like fence sitters on this show, as we Brits would say. So no sitting on the fence. Be bold, be brave if you can, and you'll have my infinite respect. So Desiree and Virginia, you ready for Hot Takes Wednesday?
We are.
Yes, I'm ready.
Let's do this. Okay, take number 1 comes from Errico Callisto, and it comes obviously off the back of a very interesting Qatar Grand Prix, very much not your average Grand Prix at all. His first take is, Qatar is a great track, just fix the curbs and race in cooler weather. So what did you make of Qatar in general then, girls? Because this was obviously a very different sort of Grand Prix. We obviously had maximum tyre stints put in. Obviously, the curbs were a bit of a concern with Pirelli and the tyres. And of course, then we found that when we got to the race, it was very, very hot to the point where drivers were almost passing out. It was very, very intense indeed. So what did you make of the track in general? And do you think this track is a good one, even with all the issues thrown in?
Yeah, I think the layout is very cool. And we saw that gives interesting action. I don't know how it is to be there as a fan, you know, be a fan there trackside, because it seemed that that they have limited grandstands, like only 3 grandstands or so. So yeah, but I think the more racing we see there, the more grandstands they get, I guess.
It certainly helped, because for those who don't know, maybe people don't only watch Formula One, for example, it's been MotoGP season opener for about 15, 20 years now. So if you like your two-wheel action, you'll recognize Qatar straight away. And they only ever had 1 main grandstand on the front straight, and it was only good for about 8,000 people. So it's the fact they got 120,000 in for you know, for this whole weekend. I love they said, oh, it's a record attendance. The record wasn't very much in the first place. The bar was quite low. But it was still an improvement. I mean, they threw a lot of money at improving that place from a facility standpoint and whatnot. But Desiree, I'll come to you on this one. Like, do you think this is actually a good track? Ignoring obviously the curb issues and the temperature, because safe to say it was a bit warm.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, in general, I think Qatar has a great layout, and it gave us also some great racing action both on both days, especially on Saturday. We all remember the sprint race, and I think. We can compare that a little bit to Monaco, because there's definitely a big thumbs up for Qatar.
No, I think that's an interesting way of looking at it. I actually agree. I think this is a solid track. I mean, on paper, you think it doesn't work because it's only got the one big DRS zone down the main straight. And you think, well, okay, all the passes are going to be down there. But I actually liked the fact that you could race around the outside to a degree. You could certainly go the long way around. There was enough grip on the outside of the track to potentially pass there. We saw George Russell go down the inside of turn six a lot as well. So some of those slower hairpins, we actually saw some passing there as well, which I thought was pretty cool. Obviously, the issues that affected the weekend hopefully are just outliers. The pyramid curbs, I don't think, went down particularly well. And hopefully next year it'll be in better conditions as well, because December is going to be December next year as opposed to October. And yeah, 40 degrees in the middle of October in the day is far too much. I mean, it was 30 plus even at night, which is just, I don't envy the fans that had to go to that, because that is dangerously hot. And yeah, we saw the horror stories. But I generally agree with what Errico's take is here. I think the track is actually pretty good. I just agree. I think, yes, the curbs need to be addressed. This is not going to be the solution to the track limits issues. And if you're damaging the tires, then that's obviously very, very bad. You can't have that. And yeah, December, it should be easy. I mean, we raced here 2 years ago. It was in November. This wasn't a problem. October, it's still the back end of summer in Qatar. There's a reason why, if you're a football fan, for example, the last World Cup was in the winter as opposed to July, for that very reason. So for me, I'm going to say four. I agree with this for the most part. I think that it is a great track. I think if just the conditions around it was the problem more than the track itself, obviously. I think the track itself is fine. Desiree, how do you feel about it? How are you going to score that one?
I think we should discuss the temperatures a little bit more, to be honest.
Yeah, by all means, feel free. I'm here for the discussion. Feel free. Talk to me about it.
Yeah, because I mean, the curbs, I mean, they found a solution with adjusting it, and also that they have to change the tires more often than usual. But I mean, the temperatures, they couldn't change it. And that was really, yeah, that led to a horror story, I would say, because there is a long list with drivers that didn't feel well.
Absolutely. I mean, how did you feel about it, Virginia?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would also go with the rating of 4, I think, because I mean, Qatar is definitely a racetrack that was chosen because of the money. So this is, for me, the minus point, because like us European fans, or also US fans that are growing, like, would you really go there to watch the race? And in my opinion, like, it would not be my first choice to visit this racetrack, because there's nothing around it. They don't have a motorsports history compared to Silverstone or Belgium. So this is the minus point for this track, I would say.
That's a very good point. I mean, yeah, like the sport obviously wants to have races in the Middle East. It's grown a lot there in terms of races they're putting on in that part of the world for a little time. Saudi Arabia, in recent years, Qatar's now joined. They definitely want more races in Asia. They tried Vietnam. That never actually materialized due to COVID-19. China's back next year. You know, you can see the pattern. They're definitely... absolutely agree. This is definitely a money round. Say it quietly, but you know, it absolutely is a money round. But yeah, overall, I agree with you on that one, Virginia. Desiree, how would you score it? I mean, again, heat notwithstanding.
Yeah, I mean, Virginia said the money thing, and also considering as a racetrack, if I also, well, would I go there? I think no. So I think there are two perspectives. One perspective is always the interesting racing action there, but the second point is also, would I as a fan go there? And I think I wouldn't go there, so maybe I would rate it as 2.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Stronger perspective from Desiree. I love that you twins have got different opinions on the matter. I think that's actually very, very interesting. I love that. Yeah, I think it's a great track. Would I go to it? Definitely not. It wouldn't definitely not be my first choice. It has got big middle of nowhere sort of energy if I was the sort of person that was traveling to Grand Prix more frequently. You know, so I think that's absolutely a valid perspective on that one. So 4-4 and 2 on that first one. Second take of the episode comes from Jonty's Corner, very famous on Twitter. Hello, Jonty. Good to see you. First time on the show. Jonty's opinion is, or hot take, I should say, is Qatar showed us that there's way too much focus on tyre saving in normal races. We need drivers to be able to push for 100% of the time, not just 3 laps before and after a stop. Yeah. Interesting. So I'll read that one more time. Qatar showed us that there's way too much focus on tyre saving in normal races. We need drivers to be able to push 100% of the time, not just 3 laps before and after a stop. Interesting. Who wants to go first on that one?
Yeah, I disagree because I prepared that question.
Oh, okay, Desiree, you go for it.
And I hope the answer is good enough. I mean, certainly there is some truth in it, but the conditions in Qatar, they were very unusual. Otherwise, the FIA wouldn't have decided that there had to be 3 mandatory pit stops.
Yeah.
And we all know that the tires are routinely checked after each session. And in my opinion, this also means that you could certainly determine how much more the drivers could use their tires on all tracks around the world. So you know what I mean? So I think you could do some statistics and maybe come out with a conclusion or a solution that maybe Max Verstappen could have driven, I don't know, 100 kilometer faster.
Yeah, well,
that's dumb, but I think you know what I mean.
I do. Yeah.
So I think at some point, they could, but I mean, pit stops are always a strategic thing, and I think you would have to introduce mandatory pit stops. And so everyone has the same cards. You know what I mean? Because I think no team would push the tires 100% and the other team only like 50%. And then what they want to have to do, should have to do more, one more pit stop. So, yeah.
Okay. Virginia, how do you feel about it?
Yeah, as we are just talking about the money, about the Qatar racetrack in general, I would also bring the money topic into here. Because, I mean, in the end, tires is also a money thing. Like, how many tires can they bring to the race? And we all know that tires are expensive. So, and it's also probably an environmental thing you have to consider, like how many tires you want to use, and F1 is also aiming to become carbon neutral. So this is definitely a point to like the tire saving. So yeah, I'm not sure about this. I think we should also maybe ask the drivers what they think, like how many laps or for how many percent would they really be able to push? Because I think it could be also very exhausting for them to drive 100% all the time. So
I'll tell you how I feel about it. This was a very different race, as obviously we know. There was three mandatory stops over the course of the race. We could no tire set could do more than 18 laps. It was a 57 lap race, so it basically made a free stop mandatory if you're good at math. I remember Oscar Piastri saying after the race that he basically did 57 qualifying laps. That he felt like tire wear was not a factor because the maximum was 18 laps on a set. Obviously, without this, this was a safety rule, so of course they had to follow it. But I don't think it made the race any better by having a mandatory free stop rule and drivers being able to push every single lap. Looking at it as a fan, sat down at home on front of my TV screen, I didn't think, well, this was way better than the normal Grand Prix by having this rule in place. I didn't think it was any more entertaining than a standard F1 race. I think there's this almost like placebo sort of effect from certain fans where they feel like they feel better about what they're watching when drivers push, and maybe seeing some of these drivers struggle health-wise was... they may have got a little bit of a kick out of that, seeing them actually struggle a little bit physically. I don't agree with that perspective, personally. I think this was borderline dangerous. And I don't think the race itself was any more entertaining than normal just because drivers could push. I think it would have been a very different race if there wasn't this rule in place and there wasn't this pyramid curb turns 12 and 13. I think it would have more likely been a one or a two stop race. I think Red Bull, for example, are very, very good at saving their tires, and they probably would have just extended a stint or two to try and make it a one stop race. Because Pirelli, in my opinion, generally plays it quite safe when it comes to tire strategy. Most races are one stoppers. And I would like to see two to three stops in a race more often and more strategy options. But I don't think some of the talk like having to use all three compounds in a race will necessarily make that better. That's how I look at it. I mean, girls, feel free to comment on this. Did you think the race was any more entertaining because of the fact that the drivers could push every single lap? Did you feel a difference?
No, I think what made it different really were the pit stops, because I mean, Diesel and I, we were discussing it before the race and thought like Ferrari has now many opportunities to mess up the race.
Strategy wise, yeah.
Yeah. And like when there's something going wrong at the pit stop, etc. So I liked it, to be honest, to see more pit stop, but on the other hand, of course, it was a little bit confusing because you always had to calculate in your head like when does the next pit stop take place, and it was weird at the same time too.
Yeah. Desiree, how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I agree, to be honest. I was wondering why the gap between P1 and P2 was so little in comparison to the other races, to be honest.
I think personally that's because McLaren didn't have to save their tires. And I think they've actually got a very quick car. We'll get to them in the next take, because they're actually very heavy between that in our third take. We're getting to that very shortly. But I think I think Red Bull are very good at looking after their tires. That's what makes them so strong. But there was no tire saving going on in the race because they had to go 18 laps. So they could just push as hard as they can. And Red Bull actually admitted they struggle to get heat into their tires. They can't fully utilize the strength of their car because they were going 100% the entire time, pretty much. McLaren have got a very fast car, but when tire wear kicks in later on in stints, I think that's when they struggle more. Qatar didn't have any of that. So it was just a game of raw speed. And McLaren are actually pretty close to Red Bull when it comes to just ultimate pace. And I think that's part of the reason why it turned out the way that it did. I think Piastri, I think it was only about 4 or 5 seconds off the win in the end, which is about as close as it's been all year, besides Singapore, to see Red Bull actually get beaten, which was probably quite refreshing. So yeah, if you're a neutral, then of course you want to see it a bit closer. Of course you do. But For me, I'm going to score this take a 2. I disagree personally. I don't think we need this whole idea of pushing relentlessly, pushing 100% the entire time. I don't think it necessarily makes for a better race. I think having strategy options available makes a race more entertaining, right? Because in this race, everybody was coming in at the same time anyway. There was a couple of undercuts here and there, but you knew when people were going to stop. That takes some of the excitement away for me. So I'm going to say 2. Desiree, how are you going to score it? How do you feel about that take?
2 as well.
Virginia, mm-hmm. how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I totally follow your argumentation. So 2 points.
2. Okay. It's a 2s all round. Love that. We all agree on something, which is rare on this show, but that's a good sign. Take number 3 comes from Somebody Believes on Twitter. Great username. Somebody Believes says, and this is a very straightforward one, McLaren will catch Ferrari in the Constructors' Championship. McLaren to catch Ferrari in the Constructors' Championship. That's the fight for third right now. I did the maths on this earlier, so you didn't have to. There's 79 points separating Ferrari in third from McLaren in fifth right now. I think there's a good chance McLaren overtakes Aston Martin before the end of the season. Can they make up 79 points in 5 races? Because we've got 5 race weekends left. 2 of them are sprints, so there's a few more points available. But we've got 5 race weekends left. Do you guys think McLaren can catch Ferrari?
I think they would have a chance. I mean, I have to go into the points again and calculate like how many points or how to which positions they have to drive then to get so many points. But in general, I feel that McLaren is very strong at the moment with both drivers. And Ferrari wasn't so consistent the last races and didn't score so many podiums lately. So, and we all know that Charles is also a very unlucky guy. So he could DNF. Yeah. And yeah, also strategy wise, etc. So McLaren seems more reliable for me at the moment.
How do you feel about it, Desiree?
Yeah, I totally agree. I would also go with McLaren. I think they made the less mistakes than Ferrari in the past. And yeah, you never know what happens with Ferrari at the race weekend. So, I mean, there's always a chance that something goes wrong there. So, and McLaren seems to be, like Virginia said, very consistent with both drivers. So, yeah, maybe we will see. Interesting final in Abu Dhabi. Who knows?
So let's do the math here. 79 points between Ferrari and McLaren. 5 race weekends left. It means McLaren would have to outscore Ferrari by, on average, about 16 points a weekend. Mm-hmm. I think I think McLaren's got the second best car in F1 right now. I think they've got a slightly stronger car than Ferrari do at the moment. This is tough because I think Ferrari's genuinely gotten better as the year has gone on. I think, I mean, obviously Sainz winning in Singapore was a big moment. Leclerc's been pretty consistent recently. Lots of fourths and fifth places. Sainz didn't even race in Qatar because of that fuel leak he had before the race even started, which is a bit unlucky. I have less question marks about McLaren than I do than Ferrari at the moment. I think McLaren is very strong. I think Lando Norris is good for a podium if he has a clean weekend. He's got, I think, 5 of them now this season. Piastri's getting stronger by the week. He had a fantastic weekend, you know, winning the sprint and then second in the race. Career high finish for him. I think McLaren are better than Ferrari right now, but I'm not sure they're going to take enough points out of Ferrari to catch them in time. I think they'll certainly be closer by the end of the season, but my gut is telling me I think Ferrari will just hang on by the end of the season, maybe by like 20 points or less. As I think if Ferrari performs to their usual, I think they'll be around 5th or 6th. I don't think McLaren will take enough points out of them to do it. I think they've actually driven quite well recently. Sainz is in good form. Leclerc's been very consistent. I mean, it was very quiet in Qatar. He just did his own thing, but he was like 5th. It was just a very quiet, but still good points.
And it also depends on Mercedes. For example, yes. Last race, they made a little gift for McLaren. Go on.
A little gift. Yeah, Lewis Hamilton's race lost in one corner. Yes. Yeah. It's a big gift. Yes, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, Desiree. I think Mercedes will play a role in this as well, because I think generally that is a team that doesn't make a lot of mistakes, and they're always in the mix for podiums and like top fives. So where they factor in may also affect how many points McLaren or Ferrari ends up with. So I think Ferrari will just about hang on. I think they'll just get third place compared to Mercedes. I think McLaren will end up fourth. I think they'll overtake Aston Martin, but I don't think they'll get to Ferrari in time. So with that in mind, I'm going to score it 2 on this one. I think Ferrari it'll certainly be closer. I think McLaren will certainly gain ground on Ferrari, but I don't think they'll actually overtake them by the end of the season. So I'm going to say 2. Virginia, how would you score it? What's your overall perspective?
Yeah, I think I will pull the 3 here.
Oh, so, okay.
Because I think like when everything goes perfect at McLaren and at the same time nothing goes perfect at Ferrari, there is a chance. So it's 50-50 for me at the moment.
I think that's fair. I wind people up a little bit when they take 3, but I think this is one of the few takes where I could genuinely see an argument for a 3 score, because I think it could be very close. I think McLaren is definitely stronger right now, but I also think 80 points is a lot. It is a lot of points. Ferrari would have to have like a double DNF sort of weekend to really have a big swing in there like that. But I think it could be very close. Desiree, how do you look at it?
Yeah, I was just looking at the remaining hot takes, and if I have to put a 3 there. So
I respect the fact you're playing on hard. I love that. I have deep respect for you for that.
Yeah.
So do you want to use your 3 here, or do you want to save it for the other 2?
Yeah, I will save it.
So,
and I think I would also say 2.
Okay, 2 as well. So you think Ferrari will just about hang on to that third place?
Yeah, very close.
It could be very close. Definitely could be. I mean, look, they could end up overtaking Mercedes for third, because Ferrari's not far off Mercedes for second either. It's a very fascinating fight. It could go all sorts of ways. Nobody, I don't think anybody had the Mercedes hitting each other going into this past weekend for that to happen. So, yeah, that's definitely a take we're going to be doing next week as well. So keep your eyes peeled, or ears peeled, I should say, for that, for next week's show, because that's going to be fascinating. I'd love to hear your perspectives on that. So, take number 4 comes from Nizels on Twitter, and Nizels has said, Red Bull will not be able to win the Constructors' title in 2024 with Perez as one of their drivers.
Firstly, I think that Perez won't be their driver in 2024.
Oh, wow.
I have the feeling they will kick him out and take Daniel.
It's funny you say that, Virginia, because that's what I've been saying on this show for the last couple of weeks. I actually wrote about it on the website as well, WTF1.com, after Japan, where he had that horror weekend where he hit Hamilton first lap, then hit Magnussen later on, had to retire the car. You want to chip in, Desiree? Feel free.
I'm also not sure if Checo will get his seat for next year. But I doubt Ricardo, to be honest. In one hand, in terms of performance, and also whether he wants to do that again next to Max, because he left Red Bull because of Max.
Yeah. This is tough. I think there's a lot of different ways you can look at this. First of all, will Red Bull even keep him for next year? That's the first question you've got to ask. We all know how ruthless Red Bull can be. They've had no problem getting rid of people, even mid-season, let alone end of season. They've had no problem being ruthless when it comes to making those sorts of decisions. I think Ricciardo does want the Red Bull seat. I think he's changed his perspective compared to last time. I think he's made it very clear to people like Christian Horner, I want the Red Bull seat again. I think I can still do something in this sport. Otherwise, he wouldn't have come back in the first place. I think he missed it. I think he missed not being on the grid. And of course, for him, it's been unfortunate because he's been injured for the last five race weekends with that broken bone in his hand. The overall take is interesting to me because Red Bull are so good right now, and Verstappen, if Max Verstappen would be leading the constructors on his own by 100 points,
they don't need Perez.
Like, you could make a case, how important is Perez really if Max is performing at such a high level that it just doesn't matter at the moment right now. The question I have is, would a team be good enough next year? Would they be able to gain enough development ground on Red Bull where they can maybe keep taking advantage of Perez not being on the podium every weekend, despite being in the best car? Because if Sergio Perez was finishing second or third most weekend, this wouldn't be a problem. Like, everyone would just be like, yeah, it's fine. You know, it's Red Bull's the best car. We know Perez isn't as good as Max. If he's finishing second or third, no one's complaining. He's only finished on the podium six times this season out of 17 races. It's just not good enough. And we know Perez is better than that. And we know the car is better than that. Could somebody get in between those two Red Bulls every week where they could maybe take advantage of that? So you can do the math. You get 25 for a race win. If you get two of your cars second and third, that's 33 points. And you beat Red Bull anyway. I actually did some maths on this going into this podcast. McLaren's actually outscored Red Bull by 29 in the last three race weekends, just because they've been so consistent and Perez has opened the door for them to take advantage of it. So if that could happen more frequently, then the take's right. Then maybe somebody could disrupt Red Bull for the constructors next year. But I think the other problem right now is the rest of the midfield is so close, they're all taking points off each other. Like, I don't know if you girls have noticed this, but every weekend it's like either McLaren's really good, sometimes Mercedes is on the podium, sometimes Ferrari has gotten on the podium. I mean, Ferrari won a race. you know, the Carlos Sainz was on the podium in Monza as well. So it's like every week there's a different contender for who ends up on the podium.
Yeah.
So they're all beating each other up right now, fighting for second, third, fourth, and fifth. And they're all taking points off each other, and Red Bull's still been so good at the front of the field that they could just take advantage of all that fighting. So it's a very... Siri's gone off on my phone there. It's a very confusing fight where there's a lot of different ways you can look at it, but... Girls, do you think someone could potentially chase Red Bull down next year if they have a strong enough car to maybe take advantage of Perez being there if he's still there?
Yeah, I mean, if Perez really stays there and let's say he scores like fourth place or something or even lower, but then when we have like a very good car that can compete to the Red Bull, then of course it would be a problem to the entire Red Bull team, because then another team would have two good drivers. I mean, for example, when Mercedes brings a better car or McLaren brings a better car, then of course Max as one person will fight against like two people and two good cars. So then of course it gets a problem. But as it looks right now, I would say Max could win the championship, like the driver championship and the constructor ship, just on his own.
Yeah, how do you feel about it, Desiree?
Yeah, I totally agree to Virginia. There's nothing more to add, I guess. Yeah, no. At the moment, he's just so strong. And as you said earlier, so yeah.
Okay, before we score this take, I just want one sort of thing. Do you think Perez will still be there next year?
No. Do you know, for me?
How about you, Desiree?
I don't think so as well. But the bigger question to me is who will be there instead?
It's a good question, because like, do you take Yuki Tsunoda up? Do you give it to Daniel Ricciardo, who was good there before he left in the first place? Or do you even maybe throw Liam Lawson in at the deep end, because Lawson has been so good filling in for them in the time that Ricciardo was injured. It's a very tricky problem. It's a good problem to have for Red Bull. You've got three very hungry drivers, all very different drivers, all competing for three very different seats. It's a fascinating sort of situation. I think they'll keep Perez. I don't think they want to pay all that money to release him and then take a big gamble on some. I think it would be Ricciardo who would be next in line if they replaced Perez at the end of the season. But how good is Ricciardo? We just don't know, because he's only had two races since coming back, and he was great at Renault, but he was so bad at McLaren. It's like, well, what's the real Daniel Ricciardo here? We just don't really know at this point. We know how good he can be. He's won 8 races. He's an excellent driver on paper, but it's been such a long time since he was at Red Bull. I just don't know how good he is compared to Max now, 5 years later. So it's fascinating. It's a fantastic take overall. I would say right now, I'm going to score this take now. I'm going to say 3. I don't say 3 very often on this show, but I think it could go either way. I'm not sure on this one. I'd have to wait and see how good the competition gets and how good Perez will be next year if he keeps his job. You know, that we'll have to wait and see on that one. But I'm doing this with the assumption that he stays for next year. Mm-hmm. I think that it's not what I want to happen, but it's what I think will happen, if that makes sense. So I'm going to say 3. Desiree, how are you scoring this?
I would say 2, because I think Red Bull could win the championship with Max, and no matter who is the other driver, they can win it.
But it's a very fair point. Virginia, how about you?
Yeah, same for me. For me, it's a 1 or a 5. There's nothing in between. And wow. I will go with 1.
Strong disagree from Virginia. So we think Max is so good he could probably win it on his own, which, to be fair, is right now, it's not an unfair opinion. I think that's very valid at the moment, given how good he's been this year.
It's a fact, so...
yeah. I can't disagree with you, Virginia. I can't disagree at all. Take number 5, last one of the episode. It comes from Don Carillo on Twitter. And Don Carillo says, and this is... I've been looking for Oscar Piastri takes because he's very popular right now. A lot of people seem to be very keen on him. And a lot of people are making Lando comparisons, which is understandable given how close they are at the moment. I like this one different. I think it's a different perspective. Alpine is happy with their current pairing and does not miss Piastri. Now, this is I like the way he's twisted this a little bit. I think it's very interesting. Alpine is happy with their current pairing and does not miss Piastri. Now, of course, it's just over a year since that famous tweet that Oscar put out there saying that he was contracted to drive the Alpine without his consent, without his knowledge. And we all know how that story goes. He's gone to McLaren instead, and he's been very good this year. Probably a bit better than what he would have done if he'd stuck with Alpine. But how do you feel Piastri would be if he was driving in a blue car instead of an orange one? Because let's assume that they don't sign Gasly instead, because they had to get Gasly instead of Piastri. They were going to promote him up when Alonso left. Do you think Alpine misses him? Like, how do you feel about where Piastri would fit compared to, say, someone like Gasly and where Alpine is at the moment? It's a very intriguing take. I'm very curious to see how you feel about it.
Yeah, I think they are not missing Piastri. I think in general that F1 teams won't miss any drivers because they're so focused on what's going on in that moment, you know, with their drivers. So, and I mean, everyone was discussing if Gasly and Ocon would get along, and for me it seems like they are happy with each other and there's not so much of a fight. I mean, what I see on social media, it looks good for me, so I think they're happy with their pairing.
What's your gut feeling on that, Desiree?
I have the same feeling, although I found it difficult to rate it because I don't have this connection with Alpine. They are somehow under the radar this season for me. They are not often shown on German TV. Last year, not really. I mean, last year it happened more often because of Ottmar Safnauer.
Yeah.
And this year they seem to disappear. So it's difficult to say. But as Virginia mentioned, I also looked at the social media and it all seemed quite happy. So I think, yeah, they are content with their drivers.
I think you're right. I think Japan's probably the one exception because of the team orders that they had there. And we saw Gasly give his teammate the finger at the end of that race. I think he was telling him he wanted to finish in first, personally, at the end of that race. But I think you're right. I think a lot was said going into this season that famously Gasly and Ocon didn't get along particularly well. I think they've worked very hard to try and like squash that feeling. And I think you're right. I think they do get along pretty well. I don't think the driver lineup is the problem at Alpine. I think the drivers are fine. I think the problem is their car's not been very good this year. They are clearly, for the most part, a step below the other teams that are fighting for that second place right now. You've got Ferrari, Mercedes, McLaren, and Aston Martin. They've all been fighting for podiums and the occasional win. Alpine's only had the one podium all year, and that was at Monaco.
And also in Zandvoort.
Oh yes, quite right. I forgot Gasly was on the podium. Yes, well corrected. Yeah, thank you. Yes, I forgot about Zandvoort. Yes, quite right. Gasly did finish third that weekend. So two podiums. I'll give Alpine their full credit. Two podiums and the sprint podium if you want to include Belgium as well. But they're clearly a step behind those other big teams that are challenging for podiums every race weekend. But I don't think the drivers are the problem. I think the problem is their car's a bit unreliable. I don't think it's as fast as the other midfield teams they're fighting against. And I think they're down on power. I think they've said a lot in the news that we're 30 or 40 horsepower down on the rest of the field, which is a big problem on these big power tracks that we're getting towards now. So they're struggling in that regard. Would Piastri be so much better than Pierre Gasly in this car? I'm not sure. I think he's still a rookie, Piastri. I think he's obviously come along very strong this year, but I think part of that is because McLaren has gotten a lot stronger as the year has gone on. I think the start of the year they struggled, but now they're probably the second best team in F1, third at worst, as well as what I would say. If Piastri was in an Alpine every race weekend, he'd probably still be fighting for minor points, like 8th, 9th, 10th, that sort of area. I don't think he's so much better than Pierre Gasly that it would have been like this huge improvement that would have made Alpine a much more relevant team. So I think I'm going to say 4 on this one. I actually don't. It's not that Piastri's not really good, because he is really good. I just think Alpine's got bigger problems than their driver lineup. So I'm going to say 4. So I kind of agree, not for the reason you might think, but I think that I don't think the driver quality is the issue at Alpine. I think there's other problems at that team besides that. Desiree, for the last time, how are you going to score this take?
First, I thought about the 3, but now I think it's the 4 because I totally agree with your argumentation.
I've convinced you. I love that. I'm changing people's minds in here on this show. I love that. Virginia, how are you going to score it?
Yeah, I would go with a 5. I think because, as wow. I said, because I think they have, as you said, they have other problems. And Piastri is at McLaren and it's a done thing. Like, there's nothing to change about it. So why should they miss him?
Fair enough. And yeah, look, Ocon and Gasly are very close. I mean, there's only about 2 points separating them in the Drivers' Championship right now as well. And I know Ocon is a very good driver. He was up there with Alonso when they were teammates at Alpine. So I know Ocon is a quality driver. If Gasly is matching him roughly on points, then I think Alpine's fine when it comes to drivers. I don't think Piastri is a massive improvement on either of those two guys in their seat. So for me, I'm going to say four as well. I think Piastri is good in his own right. I just think what Alpine's got is fine as well. You know, I don't think either of them, I think it was just a good deal for all parties. Sometimes that just happens in sport, you know. But that'll just about do it for this episode of Hot Takes Wednesday. Desiree, tell the good people out there where they can find you, find your content, where they can get a hold of you. Tell the good people about yourselves and give yourselves a little plug before we get out of here.
Yeah, you can find all our content on Instagram, on Pitlane_Twins, and also on TikTok. But this is more like a stepchild for us. So Instagram has the better content.
I love the honesty. So like, yeah, we're also on TikTok, but the Instagram stuff's better. Just go on there instead. The TikTok's like, we've adopted it lately. It's kind of how I feel about it as well, to be fair. So that's completely fair. So yeah, it's Pitlane_Twins on Instagram. Do find them on there. They are very fun. They have very good content. I know that you guys are doing more TikTok to kind of like, I think it's more like real life stuff and more like travel guides and things like that, like how to handle the race weekend, that sort of thing. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, recently we started to grow our TikTok and talk more about our race attendances because we are frequent race travelers. So we wanted to share all those tips to other F1 fans. So this is basically what our TikTok content at the moment is about.
Yep. So if you want some fan perspective on fans for fans about, you know, attending races and tips and tricks there, you check out the TikTok. If you want the Instagram for more of the humorous stuff, shall we say, because I must say I am very jealous of their merchandise collection. It's extensive. Having been a fan of their content for a while, they have merch for everybody. I'm actually jealous of that to a degree. It's very, very impressive, but they are very funny people, very entertaining, great content makers. Yeah, do check them out if you haven't already. But we'll be back next week on Hot Takes Wednesday as we lead up towards the triple header coming up next with the Circuit of the Americas coming up next for the United States Grand Prix. One of my favorites, though, so I'm looking forward to that. Send in your takes, as always, for next week's show. And until next time, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been Desiree and Virginia, the Pitlane Twins. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you guys soon. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.